Expedition Everest is opening for annual passholder previews, so you know what that means.
Welcome to the Himalayas!
Hi, I'm Daniel.
And I'm Jonathan.
And I'm Johnny V, and welcome to the 11th Laughing Place podcast.
Today we're going to be discussing mountains, Disney mountains all over. We're going to be discussing the new Expedition Everest attraction at Disney's Animal Kingdom, the top 10 Disney mountains, and we're going to be discussing in Armchair Imagineering the future of Wonders of Life, which isn't exactly a mountain.
It looks like a mountain.
That's true. Kind of brown and domey, and
that's dome like.
So I guess we'll get things started with the news.
According to the latest Walt Disney World podcast, attraction photos are planned to be integrated into Disney's PhotoPass system.
Now, I personally think this is a great idea because I think PhotoPass is cool. You get to look at your pictures online once you get home, and it'll be fun to be able to pick between either your Splash Mountain picture or your Buzz Lightyear picture, all of that, after you see them all, as opposed to having the pressure of choosing it right there and then.
Is this going to cause more of a bottleneck situation when you actually leave the ride? Because I know that people standing around trying to see their Buzz Lightyear photo is always creates a backup, but people scanning their cards one by one and looking through their purses and backpacks, do you think that's going to cause some sort of problem?
That's a good point. It will be interesting to see how they implement it because, like you said, it could cause backups with the mass distribution of cards. We'll have to wait and see on that one.
Well, will they just put it where the booths are? It's like, you can either look at it right now at my little computer screen, or I can give you a card.
Well, people will have to stand around and see which number their picture is in and then type it into a kiosk or something, then scan their card. Now, where are they going to put all these, you know, kiosks?
They could use, like, the cash registers. I think that's what Johnson was getting at. But then everybody would have to wait in line to get their cards. So it'll be interesting to see how they implement it. My guess is they'll find a way to make already activated cards that they'll just either hand out to you, and you'll either accept them or reject them. And they'll be like, this is the card for 304. This is the card for 305. Like that.
That could lead to some problems, though, is that you could just expect, you know, come home, and then there's a picture of some random family.
Hey, it happened at SeaWorld. We got a card at SeaWorld yesterday or 2 days ago, and it wasn't our picture. So hey, it happens.
But I thought the whole point of PhotoPass was to have only one card. Now, if you're getting a card for every ride, that seems like that sort of.
Oh, that's true. They want to scan it. I don't know. We'll have to see how they implement this. I'm curious now. I didn't really think about it that far.
Hollywood's legendary El Capitan Theater will present a special two-week engagement of the film from February 2nd through the 14th, debuting a new digitally restored CinemaScope version of the film.
Yay! I love Lady and the Tramp.
Yay for Johnny, Lady and the Tramp.
I'll be stuck in Wisconsin.
Aww. But you can eat spaghetti.
I could.
Disney Shopping will stop publishing the Disney catalog in April and will focus on the DisneyShopping.com website. At Disney's California Adventure, Monsters, Inc., Mike and Sully to the Rescue has now opened. In other theme park news, Six Flags has banned smoking in rides, lines, and cafeterias at all their theme parks, including Magic Mountain.
Well, good for them.
Yay for banning smoking.
It took some long enough.
Wasn't it already illegal to smoke in line?
I think it only is illegal in some states. I think this is a whole chain having the same policy. I think in California it was, but I don't think it was in, like, Georgia or something.
Yeah. What I heard, Magic Mountain was loaded with tobacco fumes all over the place, so I'm sure everybody's glad.
And Magic Mountain is now the highest priced ticket in Southern California. It's even higher over Disneyland. Where that works value-wise, I'm not entirely sure, but there you have it.
They got to pay for those metal detectors somehow.
SeaWorld Orlando has started to substitute the Soak Zone segment of the Shamu Adventure Show with the finale of their new killer whale show, Believe. The full show will open sometime in May.
Yes, believe there's magic in the ocean.
At the exit of SeaWorld in Orlando, a large banner has been placed announcing a new addition to the park next year, entitled Lotusphere.
That's it. They don't explain what it is, and I've looked on the internet and I can't find anything about it. So if you know what Lotusphere is, please call us, because I'm very curious. My guess is it's a show to replace Odyssey, but who knows? It could be a wave swinger inside a big glass circle, for all I know. A big glass sphere, for all I know.
It's a replacement of the aquarium. I could sense it. They took it off the map and everything.
Yeah, Jonathan thinks it's a replacement for the Tropical Reef Aquarium. So we'll see what happens.
Expedition Everest has been open for annual pass holder previews. Stay tuned later in the show and we'll give you a full review of the attraction. Disney announced on January 24th that it is buying Pixar. Disney will be paying $7.4 billion for the animation company who's had hits for almost 20 years. Pixar president Ed Catmull will serve as president of the new Pixar and Disney Animation Studios, reporting to Iger and Dick Cook. In addition, Pixar executive vice president John Lasseter will be chief creative officer of the animation studios, as well as principal creative advisor at Walt Disney Imagineering. Pixar chairman and CEO Steve Jobs will be appointed to Disney's board of directors as a non-independent member. With the addition of Jobs, 11 of Disney's 14 directors will be independent. Both Disney and Pixar animation units will retain their current operations and locations.
I hate to use this term, but it's definitely a win-win situation all around for fans and for employees of Disney, don't you think? I think that this is definitely going to result in better films and more money for Disney.
I think it is. I think it's, I mean, the old quote that people bring out all the time, the quality will out, from Walt Disney. I think that usually, I mean, it's not a guarantee, but usually if you try hard and you put out a quality product, you're going to get financial returns. And that's what's been Pixar's big success through their first films. I mean, every one has been a really good success in every one of them, even though people prefer some over others. They're all undeniably, in my opinion, high-quality productions. And I think that the idea that Disney is not only buying up the company, but even kind of integrating a lot of the people involved in the creative decisions that, you know, created this high-quality product, could only mean that hopefully Disney will have this sort of high quality. And if they do that, I think that Disney has now just made an amazing boost in terms of a force to be reckoned with in the entertainment world. And I wouldn't want to be one of their competitors right now. Now with John Lasseter in charge of both departments, is it going to want to keep Pixar different than feature animation? Because they seem to be keeping them separate. I believe I don't remember if it was Bob Iger or Dick Cook said that they're still going to keep the Pixar name because it's a nice brand and all that. So are the Pixar movies going to be very different than the Disney feature animation movies? And if so, you know, what's going to be the difference? Is Disney feature animation going to make movies more like Beauty and the Beast and Pixar making movies more like The Incredibles, and to keep it separate, or what? It'll be interesting to see.
I would like to see John Lasseter focus more on his Pixar films still and not necessarily deal so much with feature animation over at Disney and let them kind of do their own thing and then stick with what he knows, basically. I know that a lot of the features were rushed out. If you have one feature every year like Michael Eisner wanted, then you're going to get stuff like, you know, Home on the Range. But if you take your time and try and, you know, like you said before, create a quality film, I think you're going to end up with something good like the Pixar films have done. I would like to see John Lasseter sort of install people to run feature animation over at Disney and let him, you know, keep doing his thing over at Pixar.
Well, I've never worked with the man or know too many people that work at Pixar, but based on my knowledge of the situation, it seems like John Lasseter is somewhat Disney-esque in terms of he knows the right people for the right jobs, and he doesn't seem too much like a micromanager as much as he knows who to put in the right places. And so if he can do that, then he probably will be able to do, like you said, and kind of leave them alone. But, I mean, I'm hoping that he improves on the product, because honestly, I didn't think too much of Chicken Little And I would think that if he was in charge of the department, that he would probably want something a little bit higher quality than Chicken Little or Home on the Range, like you mentioned. Is your point that you don't want John Lester to spread himself too thin?
No, of course not. I don't want to see him micromanage. I want to see him pick the right people for the job, a la Walt Disney. That was the whole reason of buying Pixar, was to get back to Disney's roots, which Pixar always had in the first place.
I think that it is, and I think that actually, in some ways, creatively, this could be a much more... I don't know, I could see, I don't want to be too optimistic, I guess, but I could see this being somewhat of a renaissance, much like when Eisner came in, if not even more so, because I think that Lasseter is somebody that creatively has produced stronger product in the last 10 years than just about anybody's ever done. So,
what's interesting is the Imagineering position. That's what I'm most fascinated.
Yeah, that was a little bit of a plot twist, the little Shyamalan ending thrown into that press release.
What? John Lasseter in Imagineering?
I don't know, a former Jungle Cruise skipper, who knows what could happen.
That's right, you don't want any former skippers running stuff.
You don't see that every day, but I do.
No. Oh, come on.
Sorry, wow. I couldn't resist.
You know, it'll be great when he has, like, his press releases, and he's like, if you like this press release, I'm John Lasseter. If you didn't, I'm Jeffrey Katzenberg.
Ouch.
Well, what do you think that he could do for Imagineering?
I don't know. It's one of those things that... I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean that I don't know specifically where his expertise lies. I mean, when Imagineering first started, they were started with animators. So certainly, to me, if you know theater or if you know movies, if you know anything involving storytelling, you're going to be able to, you know, contribute something into Imagineering. I'm not sure what it will be, but I'm sure it'll have something to contribute, and it'll be something that I think will help a lot, so...
I mean, he'd probably be involved with story concepts or just putting his movies into ride format, which is what they've been up to lately anyway.
Well, it's true. I think that one good thing that will come of this is because he's head of both animation departments, any animated feature that he thinks is, like, particularly good, because he's in charge of, well, not in charge, but because he has involvement heavily in both departments, he may be able to streamline. So where we may be able to see synergy work again, where you have, like, you know, when the Hercules Victory Parade came out at the same time as the movie and whatnot. And since you know John Lasseter is going to deliver a quality product, you know you're not going to have too much of a problem in terms of a movie bombing or something.
So you're saying that basically they're just trying to get back to their roots again, just in Imagineering now.
I think so. I think lately synergy hasn't really worked as strongly as it could have. I mean, Pixar has released some really great movies, and just now we're getting a Monsters, Inc. attraction at DCA, and it was almost five years after the movie came out. And, you know, they could have released it as part of the opening roster of attractions at DCA, and I think that would have helped the park, and I think that it would have helped the movie, and that's what synergy is all about.
I noticed that no one... talked anything about Steve Jobs yet. I don't think that's where the media seems to be headed, is, oh, Steve Jobs is going to take over, he's going to be the next CEO of Disney or whatever, and it doesn't seem like he's going to be able to do anything other than be this, you know, mouthpiece for Disney, and he's just a pretty face.
I think you're kind of right on that. I think the media is going to make a bigger deal out of Steve Jobs than... he is. I mean, for all I know, he has some secret plan to try to gain support and take over. But I think Disney would be too suspicious of him doing that for them to let him on the board if he was going to do something like that. I think most likely it's just a nice position for him to have. He's going to have some pull on the board, I'm sure, because of his success. But, you know, he's one voice of a few, and I think that it'll be nice to see somebody else, considering a lot of people think of the board of Disney as a little bit of a clique that they don't think outside the box enough or whatever. So this will help address those concerns. But I honestly think that the John Lasseter move probably will end up doing more for the average customer in terms of difference than Steve Jobs will. I mean, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what he brings to the board. That could be interesting.
Well, the interesting thing there is that Steve Jobs and John Lasseter are sort of, you know, they're definitely an acquaintance, you know? So, I mean, it could help on John Lasseter's part to have somebody that high up, I guess.
It's true. It's true. I think that if John Lasseter is going to be involving in especially Imagineering, if he wants to support a project that needs like a high budget because he has Steve Jobs on the board, it may help him with things like that with the politics of it. So it may make John Lasseter's life a lot easier and give him even more creative freedom that way. So it'll be interesting to see what Steve Jobs' role ends up being on the board, because he could end up being, like you said, just another pretty face. I don't know.
I think people who are not Disney fans are expecting it to be like when Apple bought Steve Jobs' company, which was called Next, and he took over. He said, oh, I want nothing to do with Apple. Then he turned around and then, you know, released the iMac and all this other stuff, and now they've made a lot of money. I think that's what people are hoping for who are not Disney fans.
Well, you know, it's going to be like, believe there's magic in the stars, powered by Macintosh. Well, you know it's good when, like, all the rides switch to Macs and their, like, 101 situations are reduced by a certain percentage or whatever. The rides will not get a blue screen of death. Instead of a My Pal Mickey, they'll have a My Pal, like, iPod that you can take around the park that will play, like, music depending on the area. That'd be cool.
My Pal Pod.
I want a Mickey Pod. That'd be awesome.
It's in his back.
That would be cool. You know what's going to happen. It's only a matter of time. If Bono and U2's got one, then Mickey will have one soon.
To play another song, press my lip band.
You twist his nose and you move to a different menu.
There was an interview, or I don't remember where I read it, but it was Steve Jobs was saying that when he came up with the idea of doing like video podcasts, that he went to Bob Iger immediately because Bob Iger was very interested in technology. And I know Bob Iger made the speech a while back that kind of was shocking about Disney possibly looking into releasing DVDs or some sort of video on demand around the same time as theatrical releases. So I think that Bob Iger's interest in technology could give Steve Jobs some interesting things to bring up to the board in terms of new merchandising possibilities and entertainment possibilities and things like that. I think that could be interesting to see if Disney thinks more outside the box on stuff like that than they have in the last few years.
Yeah, going back to their roots. So basically Disney just spent $8 billion to go back to the way they were back in the 40s.
Certainly a better buy than ABC Family any day of the week.
Today's trivia question is, how tall is Expedition Everest's mountain? The answer is coming up.
And now it's time for our Armchair Imagineering, where we put on our sorcerer hats and come up with different ideas for Disney destinations around the world. Today's topic is what to do with the Wonders of Life Pavilion at Epcot, because from me visiting just in the past few weeks, when it was open over the holidays, you could easily tell that it was not all that attended. It is hard to find, so I think that's one of its problems, but in general, it just hasn't really clicked. So what would you suggest as a replacement? And should they keep the dome?
They should build a Lotus Theater.
Maybe that's the big secret.
Maybe that's what it is. It's a joint venture. I would like to see them do something, not necessarily kiddie ride, but something that everyone can go with together and enjoy. Not necessarily animatronic heavy, but not necessarily a roller coaster either.
I think that that's a good model for Epcot, because I think Epcot is it's somewhat of a tranquil park in terms of the type of ride experiences. Beyond Mission Space and Test Track, which even Test Track isn't that bad, most of them are more benign and relaxing. And I think that's a good standard to have. I don't think they really should build a thrill attraction at Epcot. I think they're fine with Mission Space and Test Track. So I think something for the whole family would be a good move. But in terms of theming, I'm not entirely sure which route they should take. I mean, unfortunately to me, Epcot's kind of lost its focus. They've got some things that are more fantasy now. In general, it's edutainment, but I don't know. What would you use edutainment for these days?
Well, what
I would like to see them stick with a health theme.
Yeah, I mean, would you want to keep up with the whole body thing, or would you just want to move on to something entirely different?
I don't know. See, the health thing seems very trendy because everybody's into, like, diets and whatnot. I mean, health is still a very popular topic to discuss. I'm not sure if, I mean, their approach in Wonders of Life, I think, was pretty off the mark. So I don't think that's necessarily a judgment of the theme that it didn't work well. But on the other hand, it seems like a rather difficult topic to approach in the first place.
And, well, here's the main question. I mean, how big really is that space for a adequate, like, say, dark ride? I mean, how much space could they actually, is that building?
It's huge, isn't it? Because they have Body Wars, which is a pretty sizable block of land, and you know they're going to build an e-ticket attraction. It's just a matter of deciding what type of attraction they're going to put in.
It is big. You can tell, like he said, you have Body Wars, and you have lots of different elements. Even Cranium Command essentially goes outside the berm of that dome. And the dome itself is big. It's a big show building. I would say that you could put a ride as big as, like, It's a Small World or something in there. Like, it's a big building. I don't think you could really put a roller coaster in that spot. I mean, not that I think they should, but I think that anything that is maybe slower moving or doesn't need a whole lot of track would fit just about anything you might want in there, I think.
So,
Spider-Man clone.
Wait, so if Mission Space is right next door, or Universe of Energy is right next door, would you want to do a sort of spin-off of either one of those two attractions, or would you just go with a completely new thing? Because, I mean, it could be a good idea because of how intense Mission Space is, you know, to do the kid-friendly space journey thing.
It's true. I'm not sure if the hell theme is something that really could be conveyed well in a Disney theme park ride. It's really tough because it's a sensitive issue. People, if you deal with nutrition, everybody has their own ideas about what is healthy. And then if you do something that's too anatomy focused, then some people kind of get grossed out. It's really tough to deal with that topic. I think that maybe if they did something similar to Body Wars, where you're going through the human body internally, and it was something more like maybe Adventures Through Inner Space, it could possibly do well, especially if you bring up stuff like DNA and things that are a little more interesting. But I don't know how easy of a sell that would be.
Yeah, I mean, would really people go for that at all?
It's hard to say. It really is.
Well, I think the answer is no, because obviously if you look at that area, no one liked it. It was, you know, shut down very quickly if you really think about it. I think the question is, what are they going to put in instead?
Future World in general is kind of a hodgepodge of ideas. It's not specifically collective theme.
I mean, it's just within this hodgepodge of ideas that you say you just need to find what's missing, what hasn't been covered. There's got to be, you know, something that they haven't touched.
Well, I can think of a sweeping topic they haven't exactly touched. Because they've covered essentially land, water, air. I mean, they've covered basically the basics. There's not a whole lot of topics to be, sweeping topics to be left. I mean, I'm almost with Johnny and build the Spider-Man clone and theme it to The Incredibles or something at this point.
Not necessarily. I wouldn't go that far. I would like to see them use that. I've always said that I'd like to see Disney use some sort of Spider-Man clone. I don't know if that would fit there, or, like, even if it was some sort of weather attraction. Oh, you're in a hurricane or something. You know, oh, now you're in a tornado. That would be kind of fun, too.
Yeah, that's a good idea, actually. A study of natural disaster type attraction could be good, because essentially you could be a storm chaser, as it were, and you go through different types of storms and whatnot. It could be exciting, and then they could have a little bit of education, especially in the pre-show and whatnot.
And what's interesting about that is that then they'd be completely competing with Universal.
It would be a very big send-off to a Twister as well. The only problem with something like that is just when you have things like Hurricane Katrina and whatnot, whether or not people would find an attraction like that in poor taste. But I haven't seen Universal experiencing much flack for a Twister, so I mean, that's based on a movie, which helps, but I think that they would mostly be okay. I guess there is a problem. I mean, in some ways, I don't want Future World to become Pixar Land, but on the other hand, the Future World that I grew up with that I felt worked cohesively is totally gone now, and in some ways, I would almost prefer Pixar Land just come about, because then there would be some sort of collective thought to the whole thing.
Hey, I think I've got it. I know what should go in the Wonders of Life. I've got it.
Horizons! Bring it back! Bring it back! Now that's called wishful thinking, folks.
That's right.
Seriously, though, I would not mind that one bit.
even an update of Horizons, you know, move the Carousel of Progress over and add a couple of extra decades, and I think that would fit perfectly right in that area.
But again, it's the same sort of thing like you said. I mean, updating may not be the key, because if health was a part of the problem of Wonders of Life's downfall, then possible postulations about the future maybe have been Horizon's downfall. I mean, it may just be a thematic thing. It's a very tough question. I don't think there's an easy answer to what should go in there, because to some extent it takes an entire reevaluation on what you think Future World should be about. Well, that wraps up our Armchair Imagineering discussion. Next week, we're going to be discussing Disney's California Adventure, which is turning 5 years old on February 8th. We're going to be discussing what they can do with the Timon lot, currently a big expansion space behind the farm and Pacific Wharf. So, if you have any ideas, you can call us at 1-866-327-5072. If you're under 18 years of age, please make sure you have your parents' or guardian's permission before calling. You can also email us at podcast@laughingplace.com or post in the discussion boards in the podcast section.
Today's top 10 list is about mountains. Number 10, The Nightmare Before Christmas, a Swirl Mountain.
Not a particularly high mountain, but highly stylish.
Number 9, Mount Olympus from Hercules.
Very pretty.
Number 8, Grizzly Peak at Disney's California Adventure.
The bear that looks like a wolf.
And Winnie the Pooh from the back.
Mira, it's a wolf. It's a wolf. Look at the Wolf Mountain. That's all I got for 2 years.
I think the problem they had with that is that it looks like it's howling at the moon, which bears don't typically do. Unless it's a full moon, apparently. Maybe it's a were-bear, or it's a bear-wolf. It's a were-bear.
Well, I know the bear on the California state flag is looking up at the star on the flag. I think that's what they were going for, and people think it's howling.
Number 7, Bald Mountain from Fantasia.
Dun, 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 dun. Okay, that was about the geekiest thing ever.
Number 6, Big Thunder Mountain at various Disney theme parks.
Hang on to them hats and glasses, because this here's the wildest ride in the wilderness.
Or your mattress is free!
What?
What was that?
It's the new... I'm sorry, but I guess it's one of those things that you go on it over and over again until you get used to it,
but that new narration in California, it just sounds like the guy from Mattress Barn. I'm sorry, it really does. You really think he's going to say, and your mattress is free!
Okay. Number 5, Splash Mountain... At various Disney theme parks.
I think the Splash Mountain design is really interesting because the way they do that big stump on the top of it, it's very striking, unlike anything else.
Number 4, Space Mountain. Adam, guess what? Various Disney theme parks.
Space Mountain, I was just thinking about the other day, is a very weird attraction because you kind of take it for granted now, you know, Space Mountain. But if you think about it, it's this, like, big white building that kind of looks like a mountain. And then it's called, like, Space Mountain. And just the name Space Mountain is somewhat odd because how could there really be a mountain in space? I mean, there could be a mountain, like, on a planet, but, like, you know, it's one of those things you just take for granted and you don't really... think one way or the other, but it's unique and it works now, but thinking about it, it's somewhat odd.
Number 3, Matterhorn Mountain at, this time, not various Disney theme parks. It's actually just located at Disneyland in California.
Remain seated, please. Permanecer sentados, por favor.
Well, it's the classic. It inspired them all.
It did?
Yeah, it did. And it was the first roller coaster to be tested using hay at the end, which inspired the water splash.
Didn't Disney like it, the hay way, when he did it?
Personally, if I was in Imagineering, I'd test every attraction with no exit brakes, but with hay. But that's just me. Even Rocket Roller Coaster.
Oh, man. Number 2, Forbidden Mountain Chain at Disney's Animal Kingdom.
And that's because Expedition Everest does not really feature Everest, because you are taking an expedition to Everest. The big mountain you actually see is the Forbidden Mountain, which is where the Yeti lives, that keeps you from getting to Everest.
Well,
so if you're looking at the mountain, you can see Everest in the chain, it's in the back, but the big mountain you're seeing is not really Everest, it's the Forbidden Mountain that shall not be named.
Yes. And now, number 1. Drumroll, please. It's Mount Prometheus at Tokyo DisneySea.
I think this made number 1 simply because of its size, because it's about the only mountain that has 2 attractions in it, a restaurant, at least one restaurant, a gift shop, and just a whole lot of things. Basically, the whole land is inside this mountain. It's amazing.
Not to mention every once in a while it, like, blows up.
It's and there. It's Tokyo, so it's automatically given the Tokyo boost.
Woo!
One time, I was, like, walking through the park, and this big ECV completely ran into me, and it was better in Tokyo.
Today's trivia question is, how tall is Expedition Everest's mountain? The answer is 199 feet. If it were just 1 foot taller, it would need airline beacons and ruin its theming. And now, our review of Expedition Everest.
You know what? It is nice to finally say that Disney has a solid, solid e-ticket where you do not feel like they cheaped out on everything. Yay!
Not only that, but it's solid in the fact that it's made of rocks.
Wow.
Just wait for it. I got another one up my sleeve.
Oh, no. You haven't been, like, all night been thinking up of Everest jokes, have you?
No, not really. I just have that other one.
It is really nice to see that they finally fully fleshed out the idea that it doesn't really feel to me that they, you know, cheaped out or there's cut corners. It feels like you're stepping into somebody's imagination and it's fully constructed. And it's a full presentation. It's definitely a very solid e-ticket. I mean, it begins in the queue. The queue, to me, is as good as Cali. It's even, in terms of atmosphere, as solid of a setup as Indy. It's maybe not quite as elaborate, but in terms of setting the tone for the attraction, it does about as good of a job as any queue I've ever seen.
They do a very good job in the museum they have set up to actually bring the fact to you that the Yeti could just quite possibly be a real creature. They do that very well without making it look, you know, sort of, you know, ridiculous, because, you know, it's hard to really pull that off.
I think they were very clever in how they did it, because what they did is the queue takes you through a few different places. It takes you through, like, a temple area and a shop and then the museum. And the museum has so many legitimate artifacts that then when they throw in these other artifacts that are from the Yeti attack, you believe the fantasy of it. I mean, it's kind of like the Blair Witch Project and how at first, you know, people kind of believed it because the marketing campaign was so subtle. I think it's really a fun way of doing it. And then they show you little pictures of the Yeti that kind of give you a taste of what he's going to look like, but not really. And they do that throughout the attraction, and they kind of tease you a little bit, and they don't really reveal the Yeti until the end.
And when it comes to immersiveness and bringing you into the atmosphere, even right before you get on the ride, the train pulls in, and the engine literally gives out steam right when it stops. I think that's one of the niftiest things I have ever seen for something so simple as just a boarding station.
It's a really great theming touch, because it really, again, you buy the illusion that it is a train. And what's neat is they've developed a system to where when the steam comes up, the train captures a bit of the steam, and it does steam, I believe, at the top of the lift hill or at another segment where you actually can see that the engine is still steaming. And then once you get on the ride, immediately it kind of takes you by surprise by starting a little faster than I was expected. You go up a little lift, and you go through a nice little scenic section, which is honestly one of my favorite parts of the ride. I just think it's a charming little start, and I like the fact that it's something that is a little more than what you were thinking. You were thinking it was just going to turn the corner and go up the lift, and it has this little You know, you take a breather. It lets you immerse yourself in its environment before throwing you right into the story.
Now, I'm going to bring up something entirely random, but something that actually did sort of throw me for a loop was that the trains actually had little places that you could put in different things like hats and things, rather than most coaster trains where you just sort of have to stuff things under your feet. This one actually has a very good place, like the Indiana Jones. The closest thing would be the Indiana Jones Jeeps in California that you could just place different items in so you don't have to worry about hanging on.
Yeah, the netting is good. It's not good enough to carry too big of a bag, I would say. Like, I don't think a backpack would do well with it, of course. Definitely, I would say if you're traveling and you're carrying a big diaper bag or backpack, either plan on carrying it, putting it at your feet or something, because it's not going to fit in that bag.
But yet hats, which will easily fall off.
Yeah, hats, glasses,
cameras,
things of that nature. Yeah. And it's great. I like the fact that they put that in, because even though the coaster doesn't go upside down, it is rough enough that it would be difficult to keep things just on the floor.
So let's bring up the roughness. Let's start off with how rough do you think, would you compare this coaster to other coasters in the Disney property?
I think that Expedition Everest is less intense than the Rock and Roller Coaster, and I think it's by far the smoothest coaster on property. In terms of the other ones, it's a little tougher because it does have elements where for a little while, for maybe a few seconds, it's much more intense in terms of G-forces than, say, Big Thunder Mountain. But overall, it's a much more slow and sweeping experience than Thunder Mountain. So it kind of depends on the person how it's going to affect. I mean, I think for some people might find Thunder Mountain and Space Mountain more rough just because they are more jerky and they do jostle you back and forth and back and forth. Whereas Everest, it's much more calculated and it sweeps you in big turns, and it's not quite as wild of a ride, even though it does give you some pretty strong forces at times. So that's tough to say. It's hard really to classify as a coaster because it's very different. It's much more cinematic and much less coaster-ish, as it were. I'm a big wimp when it comes to drops. I don't even like going on Splash Mountain, and I felt that from the front that it wasn't even as bad as some drops in Space Mountain. It didn't get my stomach the same way. It didn't really faze me one way or the other. I really found it fine. Now, towards the back of the vehicle, I found it, you know, pretty strong. I found it a strong drop. Still not as bad as Splash Mountain, but I would say if you have a problem with drops, to sit as close to the front of the vehicle as you can. Now, in terms of the story of Everest, I think that they did a good job in terms of not overstorying it. I mean, you got a problem, I think, when you go on the Mummy Universal, where you really come out of that absolutely confused at what happened, because there's so much backstory that's necessary to understand it. And then, of course, I don't really think they executed it all that well. But I think Everest is something that most people almost immediately can understand, because it is simple. But again, it's also a roller coaster that goes, you know, 50 miles per hour. So I think that it's understandably simple. And I think they did a good job executing it. I think it's easy to understand.
Basically just Matterhorn 2.0.
Yeah, and that's one thing that I think may be a little bit of a nitpick, if you're going to say, is that in terms of theme parks as a whole, this attraction to me only takes it to another level in terms of how well it's done. The execution in this is about the best of theme park attractions. But the theming and the concept of it, essentially it is a roller coaster going around the mountain. Essentially it is, you know, a monster and something goes terribly wrong. It's nothing outside of the box in terms of that. And there's nothing wrong with not reinventing the wheel. But if that is something that, you know, if
you're expecting that, then that's not necessarily what you're going to get. But yet either way you slice it, it's not a bad ride by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's quite on the same level of Indian Tower of Terror in terms of the integration of a wonderful new technology and in wonderful rides that span a wonderful, like, but I mean, you don't always have to compare it to quite that level. And even though Expedition Everest to me doesn't quite get to that level, it's still a very solid e-ticket and definitely recommendable for everybody.
And on top of that, a very unique coaster. It's unlike any other coaster you'll find at the current moment.
Definitely. Now, another complaint I've seen on from people is that the scene with the Yeti at the end is a little bit too short, and I think we disagree on this one. I personally think that the scene with the Yeti is just about right, because I like the fact that you only see him about enough to kind of get an idea of what he looks like. You get the idea of how much money they spent on this animatronic. He moves amazing. He sweeps around, and I think it's a good scene. I don't think that it's too short. I think it's just enough time that you want to go on it again to see him again. I think too much more time, and he would start to look fake.
Now, for me, I did this ride 3 times, and rather than getting more of a sense each time of what the Yeti entirely looked like, I mean, I was expecting that every time I might just pick up a little bit more of what the Yeti was all about. I didn't exactly get that. I mean, it's short enough where you can't you either grasp it or you don't quite understand exactly what you're looking at. I mean, that could be what they were looking for, but I'm not exactly sure if that's what I would have preferred. But, I mean, I'm not expecting them to slow it down insanely, but, I mean, if it just would have been a little bit longer, then I think, for me, it would have been a little bit more interesting, because I can't exactly get a sense of how, I mean, I sort of can get a sense of how big the animatronic is, but at the same time, the way that the scene is set up, I can't exactly compare it to anything at the time, because you're whizzing by it so fast. So it just all depends. I mean, it varies per person.
And I do think the way that scene is staged could have been slightly better. I think the fact that they went with an all-dark room with just the Yeti lit up makes the Yeti not as impressive in terms of size, because there's less to compare him to, because he is basically the only... He's not only the focal point of the room, but he's basically the only thing visible in the room. And I think that it would have been a little smarter to put more of a... lights around that cave set, because I do believe it's themed. It's just very dark and you can't really see, and the Yeti's very much the focus. A little too much, maybe a bit too theatrical for something that was supposed to be realistic. And again, I don't think you get as much of a sense of his size and how impressive the animatronic is. But
either way, it does look impressive. I mean, it's unlike anything I've ever seen. Yet at the same time, I can't exactly understand what I saw in the first place. But either way, I mean, it looked pretty cool from what I could understand.
And I think in the end, another really great thing about Everest in terms of an attraction is that even though it's not a ride that everybody can go on, I believe that there's not one person that's going to go through that area that's not going to get something out of it. The quality and the architecture and just the mountain itself, people are going to get something out of that attraction even if they're not riding it. Even if you're just waiting for your family, it's just a great place, and is certainly miles ahead of waiting for your family at the exit of, like, a regular roller coaster or something. So I think that it's a big hit from that perspective. Yeah. All in all, I think that Everest is a great attraction, and I'd be willing to predict really strongly that Animal Kingdom is going to overtake MGM this year, or Disney MGM Studios, I should say, in attendance. It was really close last year, and I think the word of mouth in Everest is going to be really strong. I think that Disney MGM Studios is coming off of a year where they had Lights, Motors, Action, so they're going to experience a little bit of a dip because they don't have a new attraction this year. Well, besides Narnia, which is more of a marketing tool, honestly, than an attraction. And I think that Everest is going to help Animal Kingdom catapult over MGM Studios. So I guess that's it.
Wait. I got a joke.
All right.
So now that you've heard all this very interesting information about Everest, you'll be so excited that you'll never Everest.
Oh, wow.
Oh, really? You just said that, didn't you?
You did. It's the My Pal Mickey joke of the day. It's like, oh, look at there. That's the Forbidden Mountain. That's the best thing we've done, Yeti! Well, that wraps up another episode of the Laughing Place podcast.
This show was entirely conceived by the Yeti.
Remember, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, whatnot, you can call us toll-free at 1-866-327-5072. If you're under 18 years of age, please make sure you have your parents' or guardian's permission before calling. Next week, we have an armchair Imagineering segment about Disney's California Adventure and what to be done with the Timon lot. So you can either call the number or email us at podcast@laughingplace.com. or just post in the discussion board in the podcast section. And now, Jonathan, with the last word.
Don't count your chickens before they exit the line.
Goodbye.
See ya.
Bye.
Hey, I got more snow cone!